Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive with us. Today, we are taking a look at Mayer v. Mayer. It's a Michigan custody case from 2015, and this one is really a doozy.
Oh, it is. And this one is interesting for a lot of different reasons. You know, this case is just saturated with drama, and it really is a fantastic illustration of just how parental conflict can have such a big impact on kids.
Yeah. So in this case, we've got Cindy and Daniel Mayer. They're divorced parents, obviously, because it's a custody case.
Yeah.
And they're locked in this battle over custody of their son, JM. And we see things in this case like allegations of coaching. We've got unsubstantiated CPS reports. And in the end, the judge decides to give Daniel sole custody. But get this, the appellate court actually upholds the decision, even though the trial court made a procedural error. So how is that possible?
Yeah. That's really what makes this case so fascinating. It all comes down to this thing called the harmless error doctrine. But let's back up a little bit and set the stage here. Okay. So Cindy and Daniel, their marriage was very short, like only lasted about a year after JM was born, and then they split up. But then the divorce itself dragged on for 6 years. 6 years. Can you imagine? And then even after the divorce was finalized, they still couldn't stop fighting. They kept battling over custody.
Oh, man. It sounds like just a recipe for disaster.
It is. And especially for JM, you know, he's caught in the middle of all of this, and it gets worse. So Cindy, she files multiple reports with Child Protective Services against Daniel, claiming abuse. But here's the thing. Not a single one of these reports were ever substantiated.
So the court's kind of seeing a pattern here, like maybe something's not quite right.
Right. It starts to raise some red flags. And then, to make matters even more complicated, Daniel files for sole custody. This ends up leading to this really intense 4-month evidentiary hearing.
4 months? That's a crazy long time for a trial.
Right. It really shows how complex this case was. And ultimately, the trial court decides to side with Daniel. They give him sole custody. And they limited Cindy's visitation to just supervised visits, at least until she completed a psychological evaluation.
Wait a minute. Didn't you say the trial court messed up? Where does that fit in?
Yeah, that's coming up. Here's where things get really interesting. So Cindy, she appeals the custody decision. And one of the main issues she brings up is this whole thing about the psychological evaluation. She argued that the trial court was wrong to penalize her for not getting that evaluation, which, by the way, the court had ordered her to get. And you know what? She was right. The appellate court actually agreed that the trial court made a mistake there.
So does that mean she wins the appeal?
Hold your horses. Not so fast. This is where this whole harmless error doctrine comes in. So even though the trial court technically messed up, the appellate court said that it didn't actually change the outcome of the case. The evidence against Cindy was already so strong that the evaluation wouldn't have made a difference.
Wow. This is getting really good. It's like one of those legal thriller movies with all these twists and turns.
I know, right? It's pretty wild. So Cindy thought she could use this procedural error to overturn the entire custody decision. But the appellate court wasn't having it. They saw the bigger picture.
So even if you win a small battle in court, it doesn't mean you've won the war.
Exactly. And that's a really important lesson for anyone who's involved in family law. It's not just about winning individual arguments. You need to build a strong case that supports your overall position.
Okay, so we've got this nasty divorce, unsubstantiated abuse claims, and this harmless error thing that didn't really help Cindy. What's next? There's got to be more to this story.
Well, there's a lot more to unpack here. Just wait. We're going to talk about Cindy's claims of judicial bias. And then we're going to get into all those best interest factors the court had to consider when they were deciding what to do with JM.
Okay, well, I am definitely hooked. Let's keep going with this. All right, so we left off with Cindy Mayer, and it seems like she's really facing this uphill battle to get custody of her son back. The appellate court even said the trial court messed up about the psychological evaluation, but it still didn't change anything. So what else did Cindy try to argue?
Well, she actually claimed that the trial judge was biased against her.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's a pretty serious accusation to make.
It is, and it's not easy to prove either. You have to remember that appellate courts use this thing called the abuse of discretion standard. So basically, they're not going to overturn a trial court's decision unless there's really clear evidence that the judge was unfair or completely unreasonable. They're not trying to micromanage every single decision the judge made.
So did the appellate court find any evidence of bias in this case?
Nope, they did not. They looked really closely at all of the judge's actions and his rulings, and in the end, they decided that everything was actually done by the book. It was all legally sound and supported by the evidence that was presented at trial. For example, Cindy tried to argue that the judge shouldn't have allowed certain statements that she had made previously to be admitted as evidence.
Oh, right. So this is where that whole party admissions concept comes in, right?
Exactly. It's a really important legal principle. Basically, any statement that's made by a party to the case can be used as evidence against them. It's not about bias or anything like that. It's just about using the party's own words to understand what actually happened.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So basically, Cindy's attempts to say that the judge was biased against her didn't work.
Yeah, the appellate court didn't buy it. They saw it as the judge was just doing his job, applying the law, and looking at the evidence fairly.
Okay, so it seems like Cindy is really struggling to get anywhere with this appeal.
Yeah, she is. And it's important to remember that appellate courts aren't there to completely retry the case. They're only looking for huge errors, things that would have significantly changed the outcome of the case. And in this case, they just didn't see anything like that.
But what about JM? Like, we've talked a lot about all the legal stuff, but this whole case is supposed to be about a child's well-being, right?
You are absolutely right. And that's where these things called the best interest factors come in. This is what Michigan courts use to make custody decisions. And these factors are all about the child's needs, what's best for them.
Can you give us some examples? I bet people listening would want to know what kind of things judges are looking at when they have to make these really big decisions.
Sure. So they look at the emotional bond between the child and each parent, and then also each parent's ability to provide a stable and safe home. The judges will also consider the mental and physical health of everybody involved. And of course, any evidence of domestic violence or abuse is really important. It's a very thorough assessment to make sure the child is protected.
So how do these factors play out in Mavery Mayer?
Well, the court saw several of these factors that were clearly in Daniel's favor. Remember all of those unsubstantiated CPS reports that Cindy made? Well, those didn't just go away. The court saw those as evidence that Cindy was trying to manipulate the system and also alienate JM from his father.
Oof. Yeah, that's not a good look.
Right. And on top of that, the court also saw that Daniel had been providing a stable, loving home for JM consistently. And they saw that Cindy's behavior was actually creating instability and emotional problems.
Okay, so now it's making sense why Daniel got sole custody in the end, even though the court made that mistake about the psychological evaluation.
Yeah, the best interest factors really showed what was best for JM, and that's what really mattered to the court when making their decision. But there's actually another piece of this case that we haven't mentioned yet. There was evidence that Cindy had been coaching JM, telling him what to say, like making false statements.
Oh, hold on. That's messed up.
It is. And this wasn't just a small thing either. This coaching stuff was a major reason why the judge made the decision that he did. The court heard from witnesses that Cindy had rehearsed with JM, telling him to make specific accusations against his father.
So she wasn't just making these unsubstantiated reports herself, but she was also using her son to back up her claims.
That's what the court found. And it's a really sad example of how much damage parental alienation can do to a child. Imagine being 8 years old, stuck between parents who are constantly fighting, and being told to say things that might not even be true.
It's just heartbreaking. It really makes you realize how important it is to focus on the child in these situations. Their needs should come first, not the parents.
Absolutely. But how do we make sure that actually happens? How do we prevent kids from becoming pawns in their parents' legal battles? That's the huge question that comes out of Mayer v. Mayer.
Yeah, that's a question we really need to figure out, both as a society and within the legal system. But I think we can learn a lot from this specific case. So what are some of the key takeaways that you would want our listeners to remember? Especially anyone who might be dealing with something similar.
That's a great question. Okay, so first of all, this case really shows how important it is to keep good records, you know, keep track of everything, especially if you're dealing with a co-parent who is difficult. Keep notes of any attempts to coach the child, any false accusations they make, any behavior that seems like they're trying to turn the child against the other parent, really anything that makes you worried about the child.
So basically create a paper trail that you can use if you have to go to court.
Exactly. Having that documentation can be so important. It can be the thing that helps you prove your case, especially when you're dealing with things that are hard to prove otherwise.
And this case also showed how powerful that harmless error doctrine is.
Right. It means that even if the court makes a mistake, it might not be enough to change the final decision if there's already a lot of other evidence. So you can't just rely on finding one little error in the case. You need to make sure you have a strong case overall that covers everything important.
So don't just focus on one small detail. Make sure the whole case is strong.
Right. And one last thing I think is really important to remember from this case is that psychological evaluations aren't everything.
Yeah, we talked about how that evaluation was ordered in this case, but it never happened because of the mistake the trial court made.
That's right. But even if the evaluation had happened, it wouldn't have been the only thing the court looked at. Evaluations can be helpful, but they're not a guarantee. The court always looks at all the evidence, including those best interest factors and any signs of parental alienation.
So don't think that just because you get a psychological evaluation, you're automatically going to win.
Exactly. You need to show the court a really strong case that shows what's truly best for the child. Sometimes that means making tough decisions and facing hard truths about your own behavior.
Okay, well, I think we've really gone in depth on this case today. It's a wild one with all the twists and turns, but I think we've done a good job breaking it down and explaining the legal stuff. Plus, we got to see just how damaging parental alienation can be.
And I hope that our listeners learned some things today. It's really important to understand how complicated family law can be and how much we need to think about the child's well-being in these tough situations.
For sure. This is one of those cases that sticks with you. It's a story about a lot of things. Heartbreak, manipulation, and the fight to protect a child. But it's also a story about resilience, truth, and hoping that the legal system will be able to protect the people who need it the most. It's really cases like this one, Mayer v. Mayer, that make you realize how much the law really affects people's lives. Like, we talk about legal arguments and all these procedural rules, but in the end, these decisions are having a huge impact on families, especially the kids.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what makes family law so tough, but also so important. You know, it's not just about contracts or who gets what property. Family law is about the relationships between parents and their children. It's about people's lives.
And this case shows how those relationships can get so messed up during a custody battle. Like, those bonds can be strained, broken, even used as weapons. It's kind of sad to think that going to court isn't always the best way to work out these really personal and emotional conflicts.
That's a really good point. It makes you wonder if there are better ways to help families deal with these situations, things like mediation or collaborative law, or maybe even therapy that focuses on teaching parents how to co-parent effectively. Those kinds of things could really help minimize the negative impact on the kids and hopefully lead to better solutions for everyone.
I think the legal system is starting to realize that those other options might be a better way to go. You know, we're seeing more of an emphasis on trying to step in early, offering parent education programs and therapy to try to deal with the root causes of these conflicts.
Yeah, definitely. People are starting to see that fighting all the time isn't good for the child, and that's a good thing. But even with these other options, there will always be some cases where going to court is unavoidable. So when that happens, we have to make sure that the legal system is ready to handle these really complicated family situations in a way that makes the child's well-being the priority.
So what can our listeners do? What are some takeaways they can use in their own lives or if they work in the legal field?
Well, the biggest thing is to be informed and prepared, especially if you're dealing with a custody dispute. Learn about the laws in your state, the factors that the courts look at, and the dangers of parental alienation. You know, the more you know, the better off you'll be, especially in a situation as serious as this.
And don't wait to get legal help. Talk to a lawyer early on.
Yes, absolutely. A good family law attorney will help you understand your rights, walk you through the legal process, and help you come up with a plan that protects both you and your children.
And for our listeners who are lawyers or law students, this case is a good reminder that just because you find a mistake made by the trial court, it doesn't automatically mean you'll win the appeal.
Exactly. Appellate courts look at the whole picture. They want to see if the mistake actually changed the outcome of the case. Like in Mayer v. Mayer, the mistake with the psychological evaluation didn't change the fact that the evidence was very strong in Daniel's favor.
So basically, make sure your entire case is solid. Don't just rely on one technicality. Be ready for any challenges that might come up.
Exactly. And it's also really important to understand these legal concepts like harmless error and party admissions. Those things can really affect how a case turns out, so you have to know what they mean and how they might apply to different cases.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything about Mayer v. Mayer. We went over the facts, the legal issues, what the court decided, and what we can learn from this whole thing.
Yeah, and hopefully our deep dive today helped our listeners understand how child custody law works and why it's so important to focus on what's best for the child in these difficult situations.
Definitely. This case really shows us that family law isn't just about rules and laws. It's about real people, real families, and the long-lasting effects these decisions can have on kids.
Yeah.
If there's one thing I hope our listeners remember from this episode, it's to approach these cases with compassion and understanding. And always remember that the child's needs should come first.
Well said. And I think that wraps up our deep dive into Mare v. Mare.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll be back soon with another deep dive into another interesting legal case. Until then, keep learning, keep asking questions, and keep working to make a positive impact on the lives of the people you work with.